WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that's in the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for March the 3rd, 2019. Yes, the first Sunday of March. Welcome to our weekly look at the world of politics and policy as we go from City Hall to the State House all the way out to the White House. So time to grab that Sunday paper, get that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a great start. Well, it's March, isn't it? Where's the spring?
It's more like January 3rd.
You look at those temps, and you know the what is it? I told you, Dave, in the looking at my Twitter feed, I've got a friend in Kansas City. They're getting snow at the rate of 2 to 3 inches an hour.
2 to 3 inches an hour. That storm, you know, we're going to have cold here for the next 24, 36 hours, and then slowly moderating later in the week. But we are going to miss that one because it's going to go south of us along the Ohio River Valley as it makes its way east. But 2 to 3 inches an hour, boy, that's really a whiteout condition those areas.
That's a welcome to March, isn't it?
Yeah, wow. Exactly.
And yesterday was actually, it felt kind of nice.
It felt good. Yeah, it was a rather mild day. My heating equipment at home was working a little less strenuously. So
that'd be the guy in the basement shoveling coal.
Yeah, that's right. And the animal on the wheel,
gerbil.
Yeah, the gerbil working really hard. All I can say is I'm glad I got new equipment last year. That's all I can tell you.
And it's getting a workout.
It really is. Yeah.
Well, I mean, at least it is kind of brighter out this time of morning,
mm-hmm.
You know, which that's kind of nice.
Yeah, although, that's going to change a week from today, though.
Yeah, I know. I was just thinking of that, how it's the time changes next Sunday.
That's right. Reminding everybody to spring ahead.
Yeah.
Next weekend.
So that'll be nice to lose an hour's sleep. I guess I'll be crashing about 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon next Saturday.
Whether or not there's a Blackhawks game.
Whether or not, yeah, regardless of a Blackhawks game, which I probably could have said that yesterday.
Yeah.
I figure that was it.
Pretty close.
6-3 loss to the L.A. Kings, the worst team in the conference.
Yeah, they had lost 10 straight games, too.
Yeah. And it was over before it began.
Yeah, stupid penalties, numbers of stupid penalties in the first period. The too many men on the ice. It was a bad dump in there by Gustafson. It was just a mess. But you know, they came back, and again, this is a team that has shown a little resiliency. But you know, that last weekend in Chicago really kind of set the tone. They played some really good games there against Dallas and against Colorado, and didn't get any points out of that entire weekend. And you know, it's been a little downhill since then, but it was kind of, I don't know, they got to within 1 point of that final playoff spot at 1 point. Now they're 7 back. So it's a daunting task. But, you know, the thing that I'm going to take out of this whole thing, even if they don't make the playoffs, is just the fact that Jeremy Colliton's system seems to have worked. It's working, and you need to get some defensemen.
Yeah, it really, that's, it just looked like lazy defense.
Yeah.
And I had work to do yesterday. I got to see most of the third period, and it just, you know, just it was all played in their end.
It was. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think the problem, too, is that guys like Gustafson have felt the scoring touch, and I think a lot of these defensemen are not doing their first responsibility. They're looking offensively rather than defensively, which is fine if you have another.
If you can play two ways.
Well, yeah, and if you have another guy to stay back, too. But I think at that point of the game, they were pinching in their defensemen and trying to join the rushes whenever they could. And it opens you up for some problems.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm still going to root for him.
Oh, of course.
I'm still going to follow him. But it just really hurt yesterday. 17 games left, I think.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's not the 7 points. It's now the four teams in front of you.
Right.
That
exactly.
You have to jump over, which is hard to do, especially, you know, this late in a season with as much on the line as there is. And, you know, there was a lot of clamoring about bringing Corey Crawford back and actually letting him start against Anaheim. And letting him start back-to-back games against the Kings, too. But you know what? You have to see what you have.
Right.
Because, you know, Colin Delia is likely going to be the backup next year because Ward's on a one-year deal. And you have to find out if Corey Crawford can cut it at the NHL level after his second concussion in a year.
Yeah, and he gave up 6 goals. His save percentage for the game, I think, was...
It was bad.
70%.
Yeah, he had 19 saves.
But I can't necessarily fault him.
No, there were a couple. There was one or two that he probably would have wanted back. But there were many where, you know, if you're a defenseman and you screen your own goalie, what do you expect? I mean, you're trying to move guys out of the front of the net, and when you get in the way, your goalie can't see.
Right.
And there was at least two that I can remember that Crawford never reacted to. They were in the net before he even realized what was going on.
Right. Yeah. The first thing he saw was the red light.
Exactly.
But we have baseball to look forward to.
How about that? Yeah, I mean, on a dismal March day, and, you know, darn that groundhog again. And, there's some baseball on the radio today, too. We got White Sox, Cubs.
We have a full sports day, Dave tells me.
Whatever you like. I mean, we got baseball at 2. We have Northwestern at 5:30. We have Blackhawks at 8:30.
That's great.
Yeah.
What a day to be in the news department.
Good point, yeah. Very few newscasts.
Yeah, not a lot of work there. Dave's working a double shift today because of that.
Oh, now you tell me.
He's here till midnight.
Yes, indeed. Curious about Bryce Harper going to Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. We were talking a little bit about this. I was doing the CLTV show on Thursday when the news broke. And it was interesting because all the talk was that he didn't like the Philadelphia manager. Gabe Kapler, who is a guy that's really into the analytics and puts his lineups together as such. And it's still not a real popular thing with some players just because players like to hit the ball, catch the ball, and, you know, just do the simple things.
Play by gut.
Yeah, exactly. Do the simple things in baseball. The other thing that was really curious to me was it's a 13-year deal, A, and B, there is absolutely zero opt-out clause in there. So he's a Philadelphia Philly for 13 years.
Yeah. I don't get that.
I don't get it either. And I mean, obviously, we don't know the particulars as to what the. I think the Dodgers came in again late. I think the Giants came in again late. I think the White Sox checked in on him one more time just to check in,
right?
And realized that the price was going to be north of the Machado $300 million. And you know, it's strange because not only it's strange because it's a $330 million deal and 13 years, but the way that they're happening so late. It just kind of goes to show you that I don't think the position players really need as much spring training as we think.
I would agree. I would agree. No, that's but those numbers are just enormous.
Well, but you know the
Machado
weird
and
the weird thing is he's taking a less value per year to the contract. You know, Machado's is up north of $30 million per season,
right?
And we figured out Bryce Harper's was $25.4 million a year. Average annual value. I think that they've kind of played with the numbers. It decreases as he gets a little older, which only makes sense. But there was an interesting question posed. Will he hit more home runs or more millions of dollars in his contract during that time? So it's $330 million, and he has to average 25.5 home runs per season to equal that and maybe better it.
I just can't comprehend those numbers.
Oh, it's crazy.
It is the world of sports and entertainment.
Mm-hmm. And we pay for it, you know.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And we'll have new opportunities, too, when they approve sports gambling.
Very true.
We'll have new opportunities to pay for things.
But a chance to win things, maybe.
Well, yeah, maybe. Good luck with that.
Exactly.
One. Yeah, you don't even want to know what my pool was for the mayoral race. Yeah, did not go well, but Yeah, we're going to talk about the mayor's race coming up. Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Andy's got the latest sports. Producer Ro is in for Kassara, and she's fielding your phone calls at 312-981-7200. You can also text us at that same number, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is trying to figure out what he should do with his mail-in ballot. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com, and you can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, after the 7:30 news and sports, we'll speak to Hal Dardick. He's my colleague at the Chicago Tribune and part of our politics and investigations team, and we'll go over the results of the Aldermanic contest last Tuesday. Then Dave and Andy launch the top of the hour with news and sports, and then we'll begin our post-election roundtable. And back again, our two good friends of the program, Brian Bernadoni and Eric Elk. Brian is Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors, and Eric is the Director of Strategy for Fulcrum Illinois, a subsidiary of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. That's all coming up. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Skyline studio overlooking the Chicago River and Lake Michigan. Polar plunge today, and of course, I think it's an appropriate day for the polar plunge, and I give my best to everybody participating in that for a great cause. I can't swim, so I'm going to take a pass. I'll just sit here on the 18th floor in the warmth of the studio. Well, it's time for our spin through national politics, and we start with Donald Trump's former fixer, his former personal attorney, Michael Cohen. Cohen testified before Congress, and he spared little in savaging the president. Facing prison, Cohen apologized before going after the president.
I am ashamed of my weakness and my misplaced loyalty, of the things I did for Mr. Trump in an effort to protect and promote him. I am ashamed that I chose to take part in concealing Mr. Trump's illicit acts rather than listening to my own conscience. I am ashamed because I know what Mr. Trump is. He is a racist, he is a con man, and he is a cheat.
Now, Cohen faced hours of questioning, not only in an open session, but a subsequent closed session. As Republicans sought to attack his character, Cohen issued a cautionary note to them for trying to protect Trump.
I did the same thing that you're doing now for 10 years. I protected Mr. Trump for 10 years. And the fact that you pull up a news article that has no value to it, and you want to use that as the premise for discrediting me, that I'm not the person that people called at 3 o'clock in the morning, would make you inaccurate. In actuality, it would make you a liar, which puts you into the same position that I am in. And I can only warn people, the more people that follow Mr. Trump, as I did blindly.
That's Michael Cohen. Democratic Congressman Mike Quigley of Chicago, he's been on our show. He also appeared on CNN. He's a member of the Intelligence Committee, and he offered some concerns. He said the public needs to know more information about truly the Trump Hotel negotiations, the deal that fell through, the Trump Hotel efforts in Moscow, and what effect that had politically for the president during the president's campaign.
I believe that the president of the United States had one of two things taking place. Either he was compromised, and I believe it would be financially, or he was using, and this is maybe what's more scary, he was using his candidacy and the notion that he could become president to personally profit. And the greatest questions tomorrow in that mind will be about Trump Tower Moscow. Because what was taking place? We now know that that deal was on, was out there through the campaign. So while he's questioning the credibility of NATO, using Putin's talking points, and while he's seeking relief of sanctions for the Russians, he is pursuing a deal that required the relief from those sanctions that would profit him millions and millions of dollars? I think that's the question.
Does that explain?
Well, wait.
That's Congressman Mike Quigley of Chicago. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now, The Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. The president was in Hanoi last week to try to negotiate with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un on denuclearization, but he came home empty-handed. This is how the president explained the results.
Basically, they wanted the sanctions lifted in their entirety, and we couldn't do that. They were willing to denuke a large portion of the areas that we wanted, but we couldn't give up all of the sanctions for that. So we continue to work, and we'll see, but we had to walk away from that particular suggestion. We had to walk away from that.
In a news conference, Trump was asked whether he had brought up the issue of Otto Warmbier. Warmbier was held prisoner by North Korea and was returned to the United States in a coma, only to die days later. Did Kim Jong-un have anything to do with it? Well, here's what the president had to say.
I don't believe that he would have allowed that to happen. It just wasn't to his advantage to allow that to happen. Those prisons are rough. They're rough places. And bad things happened, but I really don't believe that he was, I don't believe he knew about it.
Did Kim Jong-un tell you?
He felt badly about it. I did speak to him. He felt very badly, but he knew the case very well, but he knew it later. And, you know, you got a lot of people, a big country, a lot of people. And in those prisons and those camps, you have a lot of people. And some really bad things happened to Otto. Some really, really bad things.
Why are you?
But he tells me that he didn't know about it, and I will take him at his word. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I will take him at his word. That's the president of the United States talking about Kim Jong-un. Well, joining me now on the program is my good friend Hal Dardick, colleague over at the Chicago Tribune, works on the political and investigative team, and Hal was part of our election night coverage involving the aldermanic races across Chicago. And Hal, thanks for joining me this morning.
Always a pleasure, Rick.
Well, really kind of an interesting results here, and I don't think a lot of attention got paid here toward the aldermanic results. And there were new numbers that were issued Friday evening as more mail-in ballots got counted. And I'm counting like 14 runoffs here.
That's exactly right, 14 runoffs, 10 involving sitting aldermen, 4 involving wards where the aldermen did not run again.
I mean, there's a potential for a great deal of, change here on the council level. And here you look at that along with the fact that we're going to have a new mayor. What does that say about the future?
I think you're going to have a council that we can't predict how it's going to behave no matter which of the mayoral candidates gets elected. You may have a younger, a slightly more activist council. So what I find striking is that the people that were, of the establishment, so many of them are going to be gone. You have Joe Moore, 49th ward, who lost his race. You have 5 aldermen stepped down. You also had Proco Joe Moreno and John Arena, who lost their races. So right there, you've lost a lot of the long-term aldermen. Joe Moore is the second longest-serving alderman. Ed Burke is greatly weakened because of the federal charges against him, and he certainly won't be finance committee chairman, and he won't be as powerful, and maybe will lose his seat fairly soon. You got in the 22nd ward, you got Rick Munoz, who faced the domestic violence charge, but had earlier stepped on. Just a lot of longtime aldermen. Pat O'Connor's in trouble in the 40th ward. So it's going to be a very different looking council.
And, you know, when you look at some of these results, too, that, you know, you've got, I think, I would say, you know, like Rod Sawyer in the sixth, he's 50.02%.
Yeah, he squeaked through, didn't he?
Well, I don't know that he squeaks through there.
Well, yeah, if you get, yeah, that's true, because you could have more mail-in ballots and he could drop below that.
Yeah, I mean, at 50.02, all it would take, I think, is just like one or two ballots there.
Right. So,
and then, you know, you had a couple of others that appear to have squeaked through. Cardenas in the 12th.
Right.
At 50.32. Maldonado in the 26th, 50.55%.
Right.
And I don't know if that's just a reflectiveness of people wanting change.
I do think that it is does reflect people wanting change. I think, you know, Joe Moore on election night, when I talked to him up in the 49th, he said, you know, people made it clear on Tuesday night that they want to change and they're going to get it. I think they're, you know, what you have lurking in the background, of course, is the charge against Ed Burke. Danny Solis wearing a wire. We don't know who else was caught on that wire and may have done something inappropriate. So people were kind of fed up with that. They're at the executive level. They're troubled by Mayor Rahm Emanuel's taxes and the troubles with the police department. And I think people are looking, hoping for something different. And you're much more of an expert on this than I am. But I think, you know, the whole national mood, I don't think it's isolated to Chicago. People are just dissatisfied.
Well, I think it's a combination of maybe anti-establishment and a desire for change and anti-status quo, but then you also have the elements of the progressive movement involved here as well.
Right, you do. And what's interesting is, in preparation for being on your show today, I took a look at, you know, how much the Progressive Reform Caucus might grow. And it's not clear. I mean, it's going to hold its own, and it may gain a couple. So, but in some of these cases, certainly Moreno and Joe Moore lost the people who portrayed themselves as much more progressive. But John Arena was one of the leading progressives, and he lost to Jim Gardner because of issues in the ward. And Jim Gardner, I is a firefighter, but I think would probably be a little more conservative than Joe Moore. But, you know, you do have the potential that Tony Folks in the 16th will lose to Stephanie Coleman. She was behind her after the race was over, and they're in a runoff now. And Ms. Coleman is a lot more establishment-type candidate, although you do have Reboiras in a runoff with Jessica Gutierrez, who will be much more. So, you know, in the end, I don't know how much more progressive this council gets, and that it follows that national trend. The theme is certainly change. We'll see about the progressive aspect.
We're speaking with my good friend and Tribune colleague Hal Dardick. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio. Joining me on the phone, my Tribune colleague, Hal Dardick. We're kind of going through the aldermanic races from last Tuesday. And kind of, Ed Burke, what can you say, right? After everything he's facing, that's just, it is the machine, right?
Oh, it is. You know, obviously he's got many millions of dollars in his accounts, so he's able to, you know, blanket the ward with advertising. And he was out there knocking on doors after 50 years, record 50 years on the city council. And not a spring chicken, you know, and he's out there in the cold weather knocking on doors, working it. Getting you know, the vote out and his people out, it was a classic machine operation. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some city workers out there campaigning for him. But he's charged.
Oh, hell, please. Come on.
He's charged with a federal crime, attempted extortion, and he runs. He doesn't even get pushed into a runoff. He wins.
Outright, 54.26% of the vote.
Yeah, that was the 54. Yeah, that was my recollection. That, and, you know, a fairly convincing victory. He's got Congressman Chuy Garcia was backing the candidate in that ward, but Chuy is trying to build a wider progressive movement, but he doesn't have the machine-type operation that can turn out the vote. But, you know, it's a heck of a story. The other great story, right, is in the 44th ward, I think. Where you have Tom Tunney in Wrigleyville, and the Ricketts targeted him for defeat because they don't like the pushback he gave them and how they expanded renovated Wrigley Field and expanded in the neighborhood. They were allowed to, and you know, they're presumably making some pretty good money there, but they didn't like Tom Tunney standing up to him, and Tom won convincingly.
64.4%. I mean,
yeah. So you got to wonder in that case whether the Ricketts helped Tom Tunney. Family, for the most part, known for its conservative politics in what is for lack of a better term, a liberal ward, and they people like it, I think, when
people stand up to power.
Stand up to the powers, yeah. Right.
No, and another one I thought was interesting was the 13th ward with Marty.
Oh yeah, Marty Quinn. Yeah, yeah.
And
Madigan's ward.
Yes, the Mike Madigan's ward, and of course. David Krupa, this young kid with a lot of problems that had come up, but was getting basically support from Republican-aligned folks because they wanted to play havoc in Madigan's ward. And,
yeah,
even getting support from Jeannie Ives, the former Republican representative from Wheaton, who mounted that unsuccessful but close challenge to Bruce Rauner in the Republican primary for governor. But Quinn, you know, 86% of the vote, okay? So it's like...
Yeah. I think that was the highest in the city.
But, I mean, it's kind of like, don't play in my ward. This is Mike Madigan talking here. Don't play in my ward, right?
Right, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And not just that, I think, you know, you've kind of hit on a little theme there when you talk, go from Tunney to Quinn. Besides the, you know, organization that Quinn obviously enjoys in his candidacy, but you've got, okay, the Republicans coming. What good does it do you if you're running for a war in Chicago other than maybe on the Northwest side?
Right.
And Republicans come around, you should probably lace your necklace with garlic.
Wow. No, but you make a very valid point. And you know, there are pockets. I mean, I saw some goofy commentator talking about, you know, how well, if you know, you take the Republicans in Chicago and they could elect a mayor, and it's like, okay, not that there aren't Republicans in Chicago, but it's like, it's hard to have a caucus. It's hard to have a Republican caucus in Chicago.
Even in the splintered mayor's race, a lot of Republicans endorsed Willie Wilson because of his conservative views on taxes, and he did come in fourth with 10% as well, but mostly on the strength of the African American wards and the appreciation in those communities for the charity work he's done. There's no way that, you know, Republican backing the city of Chicago gets you to victory.
So now, I mean, obviously we have these still at least 14 runoffs, perhaps more. But we have, you know, two people coming in, one of which will be the next mayor of the city. Obviously, the mayor has a lot of power, but I don't see this as necessarily like an automatic rubber stamp council.
No, I
regardless don't. Of either Lori Lightfoot or Tony Preckwinkle.
Yeah. I don't either. You're going to have a younger council, less set in their ways. You're going to have folks who campaigned on change, and they're going to be a bit restive. I do think that in Tony Preckwinkle, a former alderman who has relationships with still probably, you know, a majority of the aldermen who will be there, that she's got a better shot at sort of corralling the council.
Well, it doesn't hurt to be a Democratic county chairman either.
Yeah, there's that too, you know, the power that it goes along with that, and with Lori, we don't know necessarily how she would deal with the council, but at either rate, I think if you're mayor and you're coming, I think you're going to have to, and you know, predictions are always risky business, but I think you're going to have to give them some more way of asserting themselves to avoid rebellion.
And there's that opportunity. I mean, there is that opportunity for a new mayor to do that, but at the same time, you know, there probably is as good a chance, too, of rebellion.
Right. It's gonna be interesting. It really is.
Yeah. It's. I mean, to me, it's just some of these things are just stunning when it comes to, you know, what lies ahead. And, of course, the financial problems of the city and the pension issues, issues of development, issues like aldermanic privilege. I mean,
right.
is the menu, is that all going to stay? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. And as you mentioned, there are these serious problems. You don't want a battle royale between the fifth floor and the aldermen to slow down the pace of legislation and the ability to do these important things. You've got to deal with a looming spike in pension payments, and you have to keep pushing for that to address crime in the city. And so there's two major issues, and if you have a lot of infighting, it gets a lot harder to come to consensus and move forward on those issues.
Some interesting times ahead, and helping to cover those for the Chicago Tribune is Hal Dardick from our political and investigative team. Hal, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you.
We'll be back with more right after this.
The numbers are in.
WGN Plus.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me in studio are some familiar voices if you listened to last week's show. Brian Bernadoni, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors, and Eric Elk, Director of Strategic Planning at Fulcrum, Illinois, a division of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. And gentlemen, before we begin, I want to play a couple of cuts from election night. Starting,
well, can I comment on Hal Dardick putting out the idea of garlic around someone's neck? That may be the earliest Svengoolie plug ever.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay. Thank you for interrupting, Brian.
Good morning.
Appreciate it.
Good morning, Chicago.
let's turn to election night and Lori Lightfoot, who finished first.
This, my friends, is what change looks like. We'll be in the neighborhoods tomorrow. We'll get you a clipboard, and we'll see you out on the street fighting until April 2nd when we take this over the finish line to victory.
Now, Cook County Board President Toni Preckwinkle, she used her election night speech, finishing second, and the two of them now in a runoff. She used her election night in part to go after Lightfoot, and that's, I think, shows that this is going to be a tough campaign.
My entire career has prepared me for this moment. While my opponent was taking multiple appointments in both the Daley and Emanuel administrations, I fought the power elites who've been trying to hold this city back for decades.
That's Cook County Board President and mayoral contender Toni Preckwinkle. Well, gentlemen, let's just throw this open. What's your takeaway of what happened here, Brian?
Well, one thing, it bothers me in one sense, because if you have the honor to serve a mayor, no matter what, if you're asked, you serve. I mean, you're not serving the mayor; you're serving the city of Chicago, and that, you know, that's a defense of Lori Lightfoot, and I'm not vetted in that race, but there's a duty and call to service that happens to any of us that are called to serve. Last week, Eric and I both were in agreement, I think, on what we thought was going to happen with both Daley and Chico. You know, I come in with a little bit of egg on my face saying, you know, what the heck happened? But I think all the pundits were along those lines. Turnout was low. That was problematic, I think, in the scheme of both of those races. But I think looking ahead and looking for, and we were right about Ed Burke, constituent service always will play a big role. And, you know, while there may be some that have concerns about how Alderman Burke was running aspects of his of what he's been accused of, the fact of the matter is the ward has got great service, and that's why.
Speaking of Alderman Burke, we've got a call from Bob. Bob, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Good morning, Rick. I happen to think of the situation with the 14th. I don't live in Chicago, but it just seems interesting, the interchange and the changes in politics. But with Burke being charged by the federal government, what would his seat be if he was convicted? Would he lose his seat? And possibly a tie into a second question, would his seat then go to the second place finisher in the 14th?
All right, Bob, thank you so much for listening and your question. Brian?
So Alderman Burke would be compelled to give up his seat upon sentencing, and depending on when that were to take place, either the mayor would appoint, or the mayor would appoint. Period, and then there would be a runoff depending on where it is and where it falls within the term.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with this.
Nothing
election
to do with this election
or the April 2nd.
Nothing to do
election
with
at all. But I would agree. You know that. That's one of Burke's hallmarks is the constituent service.
Well, the big thing about Burke is he's relevant in his ward, and I think that's going to be the big fight for Lori Lightfoot and President Preckwinkle, is to establish relevancy with the majority of the voters who didn't vote for them. Lori Lightfoot and President Preckwinkle are going to have to determine how they're going to find a path to relevancy.
Well, don't jump that far ahead.
Okay.
Because I want to kind of stick to this aldermanic
theme. Oh, on Burke, sure.
And just, you know, Eric, as I was talking with Hal, it's kind of with you 14 runoffs going on in the aldermanic contests, the changes that occurred and what we saw among some long-timers losing, other long-timers barely hanging on. Is there something larger at play here, and how does that affect the city, given that we're going to have a new mayor between Lightfoot and Preckwinkle?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Let's go back to the 14th Ward with Alderman Burke. You know, for years you've heard this at the congressional level, where people will rail on their on the Congress and talk down.
You hate about everybody else, but I love my congressman, right?
I hate all the aldermen, but I love mine,
yeah.
Right? So there's that old adage, and I think that came into play here. And, you know, to your point, Brian, you know, the constituent service was huge. I think that that was the same thing with Tunney. You know, Tunney is everywhere in that ward. If you go through that anywhere, all the neighborhood, different neighborhoods in that ward, the signs, you know, I mean, don't forget, he's got two restaurants there. I mean, he's very engaged and active, whether it's the Southport corridor or other places in Lakeview. I think that, you know, a number of these new folks coming down. But I also want to talk about the clip you played with President Preckwinkle talking about the power elites holding the city back. You know, let's not forget, she is the chair of the Democratic Party. So she's trying to weave this interesting narrative where she's not...
I'm an outsider. I'm not part of the power elite.
Right. And I thought it was interesting. Lori Lightfoot was very upbeat, and she wanted to come out and talk about the things that, you know, that we all agree on. You know, we're bound together by our love of our kids, bound together by the diverse or desire to get people to work, you know, bound together by, you know, the affection of our city and things like that, and trying to play to people's higher aspirations. And Tony just came out swinging. And the other thing I think is really important that we haven't talked about, the Martwick event with Lightfoot.
And I want to get to that because okay. I want to delve a little bit further into how do we get to this place that sure. we're at. We're speaking with Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois, and Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
It's the beauty of Madison Reed.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Joining me here in the Allstate Skyline studio, Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors and Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. And we're kind of dissecting the mayoral race of that concluded on Tuesday. So we end up Lori Lightfoot with the Friday additional mail votes counted, 97,000 votes, 17.54%. Tony Preckwinkle, 88,757, 16%. Finishing third, Bill Daley, 81,700 votes, or 14.77%. Let's talk about Lightfoot. I mean, what got her to that top position in your mind? I mean, I always had a question of what kind of a ground game did she really have?
You look at candidates like Alderman Joe Moore up in 49. Joe won one of his precincts out of all of them. When you can come out with a very progressive candidate like the future alderman that took out Joe Moore, as I said last week, there's going to be a linkage that you're going to find between those that were voting against incumbents and those that were supporting a progressive message. Lightfoot was very successful in saying that she was the distinctive progressive, not Tony Preckwinkle. So I think when you look at where her strengths were, down up on the northern end of the lakefront, that's very indicative that message resonated within that group of disenfranchised so-called progressives that were seeking change and going after not only Joe Moore but Jim Kappelman, not only going after Kappelman but guys like Arena and others. And that vote totals in a low turnout race, that's going to really get things going.
And Eric, you were mentioning about the kind of confrontation that occurred over in the city hall involving Lightfoot and a close ally of Tony Preckwinkle.
Well, so Lori Lightfoot was having a press conference talking about legislation that I believe Representative Martwick had introduced that would allow the assessor to be appointed?
To be appointed,
yes. Be appointed.
An appointed position rather than an elected position.
Correct. And kind of railing against that and saying, you know, hey, this is going to be politics as usual. You know, everybody, there's a number of people who are making a living off of the assessments, repeals, or the contesting them.
Yes, the tax appeals.
Tax process. Appeals. And so Representative Martwick was there and pretty much challenged her. And the story ended up not being about Lightfoot's comments as much as it was a story and video on the back and forth, and she held her ground, and it was a pretty heated exchange. And I think that that really seemed to take off right from that a little bit.
Yeah, and then too, I mean, the relatively late, because of money, the relatively late advertising buy, right, which, you know, was the Burke Four.
Yeah.
You know, which I thought was, you know, a kind of a good establishing ad for her. I think, you know, all of that seemed to, you know, politics, we've all seen it where things just seem to gel.
It was timing.
Just the right time.
For me, I in having been close in one of the campaigns, the fact that she was able to do an establishment ad and an attack ad kind of blended together.
Yeah, right.
Was extraordinarily powerful, and her timing couldn't have been better. I think there are a lot of lessons that are going to be learned from how the Lightfoot campaign managed their brand in a big field. I mean, they did break out as a result of it. But, you know, Martwick showed her as a fighter in a real-life situation, which is different than I think any other candidate had. And, frankly, it helped her across the board.
Yeah,
She was a prosecutor. But, I mean, anyone who's ever met a federal prosecutor, these people don't hold back. They're tough. And, I think when Lori Lightfoot showed that she would take on anybody, including an establishment guy like Martwick, it really did push President Preckwinkle into a position to show that, you know, she's no turncoat either. She's gonna fight. And this has the real potential to turn into a fighting match rather than, again, what I always hope as a Chicagoan, a real debate about the future of the city.
Yeah, and you know, given obviously there were numerous forums and numerous quote debates among the candidates, but in such a large field, you don't get a substantive discussion of issues. And I think, you know, we know people that didn't vote because the field was too big. They couldn't wrap their arms around the differences of 14 different candidates. They said, we'll vote in April when it's down to two and more manageable. Well, now it's down to two and it's more manageable, but are we going to get that substantive debate on where each of them plan to take this city?
It'll be an interesting strategy, or see what their tactics are. You know, there's a case to be made that President Preckwinkle says, I'm not doing debates. She's going to have the money, the resources to have a paid media or paid message. Why risk stepping on it or, you know, having an error? Let the paid message speak for itself. Why do I need to do any debates?
I don't disagree. You know, I think
it's a safe
play. Yeah. And this
it's,
is
where, it's safe. But
this
it's
is
smart.
Why. Yeah.
Could be.
It could be both. I think what we're seeing and what makes it so much of a challenge right now for those who do not vote for these two is we're in a real short amount of time. And the amount of outreach that would have to take place would be substantive. But the Cook County Democratic Party is going to show its last hurrah with President Preckwinkle if she gets elected mayor. I mean, this is going to be a situation where you may see wards that came out for Lori Lightfoot switch. Many aldermen didn't get involved in those races. Many committeemen stayed out of those races for one reason or another. They're going to be compelled to engage this time. So you could, you know, I would make no assumptions on the ward map as it sat today. With this election result, that you're going to get the same map the next time around. I wouldn't make those assumptions. Eric?
Totally agree. So in your, you pointed out, Rick, Lightfoot won 11 wards and Preckwinkle won 5. And I think you're right, Brian, that, that could flip. The other thing that'll be interesting is which of these two campaigns will have the resources, or and if there's an outside group that, you know, in the name of or supporting one or one of the candidates is helpful to some of these aldermen in their runoffs, because then that's going to start to show some real support and build a huge base, I think, for one of the two candidates.
I think we're underestimating the power of the progressives right now. You could have five socialists on this next city council. And, you know, in this morning's Chicago Tribune, the progressives are creating cracks which threaten Democratic Party unity. We're seeing those same identical problems here in Cook County and within the city council. There are different perspectives on this thing, and they're all going to come to head in the Chicago City Council.
That's Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors. We're also joined by Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson, and this is the Sunday Spin.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined by Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors and Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois, as we dissect the results of the Tuesday balloting and look ahead to the April 2nd runoff for mayor of Chicago. And we've got a call from Ron. Ron, thank you as always for joining the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Rick, and to your guests. My question is regarding Willie Wilson. Lori Lightfoot didn't carry one black war. I think Tony Preckwinkle carried four. And I think that I read yesterday that Preckwinkle did reach out to him. So just wanted to talk about that dynamics of that, because I know the endorsement didn't play a big role at this last election, but because I think it's nailed down to two. And just lastly, I know that Willie Wilson's base is primarily more of a conservative base, so I don't know how that'll play with Lori Lightfoot. But that's my question, guys. Willie Wilson. Thank you,
Ron. And yeah, I mean, everybody's been kind of asking, and in fact, our Sunday story in the Tribune with my colleagues is about, you know, where do those voters that went for somebody else, where did they go now? And I mean, let's start with Ron's question about Willie Wilson. He got 11% of the vote, roughly matching what he got 4 years ago. And I agree with Ron too that, you know, his supporters tend to be the more conservative African American voter.
Dr. Wilson has a brand, and it's brands are sometimes very difficult to transfer over from one campaign to another. I think it's right for both candidates to reach out to Dr. Wilson. In fact, not only to Dr. Wilson, but to the rest of their colleagues that ran in this primary to see what they can do. But the carryover isn't usually as good as you can't just assume 11% are going to move over into that mm-hmm. camp, especially when there are real ideological differences. I mean, Dr. Wilson was very clear about the soda tax. I mean, he wasn't for any tax increases. It's going to be very hard, I think, to move a Wilson voter into either of those camps. But if I were on that campaign, I would have made those phone calls on Wednesday morning.
Eric?
Totally agree. And, you know, it's, you know, to talk about it like this, we also need to hope that both of these campaigns are not taking these voters for granted, or the, you know, the Wilson voters for granted, or the, you know, the Mendoza voters for granted, just because they were somewhat aligned. I mean, they are completely opposite. The Wilson voters and Wilson, Dr. Wilson, completely opposite of President Preckwinkle and Lori Lightfoot. I don't see how he does that.
Yeah, as I said, it's this whole issue of transferability. I mean, it's very difficult. I mean, you know, look at everybody who's kind of the various interests in the city that are just taking a breath here, and you know that they're going to have to weigh in at some point, but really wanting to take a look here, and of course, no one wants to be on the losing side,
right?
And I mean, I'm curious too. What about the Bill Daley, Jerry Joyce voters? Where did they go?
That one to me is a little more interesting. Let's just assume that a Bill Daley voter and a Jerry Joyce voter are not really as separated as they are within the vote totals that we saw, in that President Preckwinkle, as chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party, is going to be able to reach out, maybe not to those base voters, but definitely to those committeemen in those wards, indicating this is something that is good for you to help support and get me over the top. The wards that were very good for Joyce and for Daley were machine wards.
I mean,
11, 19, 23, 13, 14, those wards, there's at least a window of opportunity for that discussion.
There's definitely an apparatus that she has that she can tap that Lightfoot Camp is not going to have.
That's right. That's right.
Well, and as we talk about this kind of issue and reaching out, I mean, frankly, we've talked about this before for the election that we just had, the campaigns were all pinpointing their bases, and they were basically victims of the size of the field. So, I mean, I saw Miguel de Valle quoted in some publication about how, well, we don't know about Lightfoot, and we don't know about Preckwinkle because they didn't campaign in our community. And it's kind of like, well, that's true, but there's a reason why. And it's because of Susana Mendoza and Gary Chico.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that last week. I mean, every campaign was going after, they figured that they could hunt down votes, mine votes in certain niche communities, and they were focused on making sure they owned those votes, had those in the bank, or, could count on that before they expanded out. And you're exactly right. That's what happened. I think we're also seeing something for Democrats that's potentially going to play on the national level going into 2020 with so many candidates in the field.
And there was actually, I think it's the New York Times is reporting today that 25% of America is represented by a Democratic presidential candidate.
This is a good opportunity for me to announce my candidacy for the Democratic nomination for president since everyone else is running.
Okay, but, now you got to buy time.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, sorry.
But the one thing that sits for me in a big way, and a story I think is also getting missed, is the incremental and steady successes Rahm Emanuel's had in this third term that he's wedging into the second term while this stuff is going on. I mean, he's been very carefully moving things along. Yeah, there are people who don't like some of the things he's moving, but he's moving that forward. But we're getting to that very end, right? We're getting to that final moment where Lightfoot and Preckwinkle going to, what are they going to do about what Mayor Emanuel is trying to push through? When are they going to engage and maybe even start moving things or stopping things before they're even elected? How are they going to start moving things forward? I think the police facility is one of them, as well as the development issues. This is complicated politics now.
This has been great for the mayor, though, because he had the gubernatorial race, we had in November, and right after that, right into this mayor's race. And so he has benefited from not being under the microscope from Rick Pearson, from some of Rick's colleagues.
Nailed it.
That election is the bright, shiny object. Yes.
Exactly. Yes. And so everyone was focusing on all these candidates running for mayor, and Rahm Emanuel has been able to go out and get some things done. I think it is really interesting because for so long he has been under kind of a spotlight.
We're speaking with Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois, and Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined by Eric Elk and Brian Bernadoni as we dissect the voting last Tuesday for mayor of Chicago. And I'm curious about, as I said, the Daley Joyce voters, where they go. Let's look at the Latino voters and who supported Susana Mendoza, Chico. I mean, now that there isn't like a candidate for every specific group, where do the Latino voters go?
Well, that's where kingmakers come in, right? And it may not be Gary Chico or Susana Mendoza that become the kingmakers, whereas where it might be actually Chewy. You know, if Chewy decides to engage at a higher level or put whatever resources he has left out there, you know, those things could matter in that election. And if you look at the chart of where those races are aldermanically right now, he's involved. He's involved in a few of those wards. So,
but the relationship between Congressman Garcia, President Preckwinkle,
has complicated.
Been a little roller coaster, hasn't it?
I think if it was a Facebook status, it would say it's complicated.
And people need to remember as well, if President Preckwinkle doesn't win April 2nd, she's still going to be the county board president. So I think a lot of folks in business are going to be kind of hedging, right?
Well, you've got seven of the runoff wards have Latino candidates in it. The business community, I mean, and Eric, this is not because of you and I not trying, you know, just even here on WGN, talking about the importance of the business community getting involved in this primary. The voters have made their decision, you know, and the business community, and this is an interesting opportunity for both sides. The business community is going to have to really triage these races, but it's going to be an interesting opportunity to watch if President Preckwinkle or Lori Lightfoot or both of them make a concerted case to the business community why they are a better choice for mayor. President Preckwinkle is going to have to, and I think it's a good idea for her to show how her social agenda can actually turn into tax savings. You know, keeping people out of prison, less taxes, yada, yada, yada. Lori Lightfoot's got to be able to make the case that says, by cleaning up government in the city of Chicago, that this is going to be a better business climate. Now, are they going to present those cases? Are they, and is the business community going to believe those cases? If I'm at the CME right now, if I'm at other places, I'm very concerned about what this means, you know, from a tax standpoint. So I think as we go into these weeks, there's a lot of ground game that's got to be taken up here.
I think it's really important, you know, as we say, make reference to business community and things like that. It's not just the business community. These folks are employers.
That's right.
These are the people employing people. That, you know, and that's, I think that's a way we also need to think about it and talk about it. These are the employers for this city, for the people who live in this city. And if we continue to keep attacking them, they're going to continue to leave. And that becomes a real problem. How do they sustain any of these programs? How do they sustain anything if employers are leaving?
And that's a 180 from everything that Mayor Emanuel did. And, you know, Mayor Emanuel was very successful in bringing a corporate face to the city of Chicago. And there are other cities that are going to be watching to see if this is a poaching opportunity for them. While we've always talked about the fact that the governor of Indiana is just waiting for a screw up to happen where he can continue to recruit, you know, tool and die places and smaller businesses to come over the border. There are big cities primed to attract and recruit actively corporate entities that have come to Chicago. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Boeing was called or other corporations were called saying, you know, Atlanta's open for business or other places are open for business. Don't hedge your bet on a city that doesn't know where it's going right now.
Well, and as we've said so many times, when it comes to the business community, the one thing they appreciate most is certainty.
A little stability is a good thing.
Yeah, and there is that argument that with Preckwinkle and her history, you do know what you're getting.
Soda tax?
You know what you're getting. Well, I mean, let's face it. And you know, obviously that is one of the issues she has to contend with is the soda tax. There's the, quote, Stroger tax, if you remember, the sales tax that was she ran and won over that, how she was going to lower the sales tax and then reimpose that. I mean, there's also interests too involved. We know she was Preckwinkle was supported by Service Employees International Union Healthcare, as well as the Chicago Teachers Union. But there are other unions too out there.
And well, the building trades are going to. I think this is an opportunity for the building trades and other groups to join together to really create a opportunity where there's an opposing view. And, you know, people have wanted an opposing view in a city council. They've wanted to hear that kind of debate. I think we're going down that path. For those who listened in the 8 o'clock hour, and heard Hal Dardick talk about what this council would look like. I mean, I think it goes much deeper than just some division. I mean, you've got a real opportunity for some council wars. Let's not forget that many aldermen, put Congressman Garcia aside, many aldermen were playing in other wards. There were battles taking place within that body, and that should be of concern. I think there's going to be some scores to settle. There's definitely some philosophical battles that are going to be taking place between, building trade heavy wards and wards where the building trades don't have a presence, and the role of SEIU. There is a whole agenda here where there's going to be, frankly, I think more division than coming together, which is kind of a tough thing right now because we have a strong council, weak mayor system. And the people that, that's maybe where the real contrast is going to be. Can President Preckwinkle, as a former member of that body, wield the authority of that council to guide it through where it needs to be? Or will she be led by it? And the same argument would be made for Lori Lightfoot.
And I think that's part of the uncertainty, again, with Lori Lightfoot is, can she exert? I mean, former federal prosecutor, it's not like she's not tough. As we saw
the video
with Martwick. Yeah. But you also have to do some kind of delicate dancing at times as well in order to take the lead on this. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming into the studio today. And, it's a month. It's a month.
And it's going to go by fast. I think the last thought I would put out on the table is this. Local races matter. Getting out to vote matters. I think representing the realtors, we're going to be taking a close look at where those endorsements and where those vote flows are going to go. It's going to be a tight race. I can't imagine it going any other way. What do you think, Eric?
I think it's going to get real negative,
yeah.
Real quick. And if both campaigns have the resources, I think President Preckwinkle will. I think it could get real negative. It'll be interesting to see what happens with all the other candidates, the folks who voted for the other candidates, where they split, what the turnout ends up, if it's even lower.
This should be a game of addition right now, though.
It should be.
I mean, these guys should be really building coalitions. That's what I would advise them right now.
That's Brian Bernardoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors and Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Time for a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, my Tribune colleague Hal Dardick, Brian Bernardoni, and Eric Elk. And now it's time to turn things over to the great Dean Richards. Good